Why do they always trick me? I always think it's a bird.
I know. I think it sounds like a little frog, but it's a chipmunk making a little monk sound. One of the sounds of August that John likes to talk about.
Right.
Monking around, I think he calls it.
That's John Latimer that Charlie Mitchell is talking about. I'm Heidi Holton. It's the Season Watch podcast. Yeah, it's an interesting time right now, isn't it? As you can kind of feel a little bit of fall.
Yep.
A little bit in the evenings, I would say. And then we will start to see things. I've already heard people grumbling about the changes and that they saw, you know, one tree is a little bit orange and they're very upset. And
yep.
I am so excited to be out of summer. I mean, I don't want August to be done. August just started, but I love fall so much and I have not enjoyed the heat of this summer. So I'm excited.
Yep. I know. I'm like, I've always been a summer person. Summer's always been my favorite season. But I don't know if it's age or if it's climate change or if it's a combination of the two. But I'm starting to see the point in people who really don't like summer. These heat waves are really bad.
Yeah.
And my body is not responding to heat well anymore. I got like a little bit of not heat stroke. What's the one underneath heat stroke? Like heat exhaustion or something?
Oh, maybe. Yeah. I don't know the levels. I didn't know there was levels. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah, I was up in Canada last week, tromping through a bog, as you do, looking for a pitcher plant.
Sure.
And like my body got to the point where it stopped sweating. And I got goosebumps all over, and like those are early signs of heat stroke. And so I got into some shade, and luckily it was a bog. So if you reach down far enough in the moss, you can find some cold water and try to cool my body down that way. But I guess in my head, what's the point of summer if you can't be outside enjoying it?
Yeah.
And with the heat and with the smoke,
It's a different feeling.
It's really
now.
Changed Minnesota summer for me.
Yeah, and I don't think this is an anomaly. I think this is forevermore, right?
Well, I don't know. I like to comfort myself that humans can, like, you know, with COVID, we can make huge societal change really fast when we're motivated enough to. And whether we stick to that change and whether we all agree on the change is a whole nother question. But, you know, the world did change overnight. And new technologies are coming along. And I don't know. I think the only way that I get through the day is that life is long. There are smarter people than me working on this. And once we figure it out, I think we'll be able to do something about it. Whether that's soon enough is a different question.
Wow, I like this optimism. And, you know, there's still plenty of time to be curious about nature and about what's going on in the world. I just sent you a little photo. So last week during our membership drive, I got to be on the air with Ellen, one of our wonderful volunteers, and she's a naturalist and she studies all kinds of things. And she was headed out into the woods the next day. She was doing a little side job, and she was telling me about last Friday night, looking for the elusive goblin fern, these tiny little plants. And so she sent me a photo after the weekend that she did indeed find some. Do you see how small it is?
That's awesome. It's so little.
Yeah.
So I have a photo very similar to that I found in a bog. Of just this tiniest little plant with one leaf and like one little frond kind of leaning over it with what looked like almost not Lily of the Valley flowers, but kind of similar, hanging underneath the frond shape. And that's looking like this. I wonder if that's what that plant is. What did you call it? Goblin fern?
Goblin fern. Yeah.
Okay. That's a great name to begin with. And I wonder if she just identified that mystery plant for me.
Maybe.
I was just calling it a little fairy plant.
Well, that's what I deemed her magical because that's what she was going to be spending her weekend doing, looking for tiny little plants, especially this one. And she would be great to talk to sometime about what she does and what she's tromping around bogs and forests like you and finding. So
That's the dream. I love it. By the way, we did not find a pitcher plant, but we found many sundews.
Oh, okay. Well, good.
Yeah.
And it was a good time in Canada?
It was so lovely. Yeah. Right. Beginning of the trip, I got to spend with my family up there. And then the end of the trip, our dear friends from Colorado came out. And we got to spend the weekend with them and my little niece. And it was just great. A lot of swimming. A lot of, there's a snapping turtle. Oh. Huge, huge female snapping turtle that lives up there. I go up there every summer. I see this massive turtle swimming around. And like once every 5 summers, I manage to catch it off the paddleboard. It's just so fun to see this huge reptile up there. And this year, I was on the paddleboard with my niece, Harper, who's 6, turning 7 soon.
Okay.
And we saw the turtle come up. We paddled over and looked off the board. And it was just in maybe 2 feet of water in amongst all these underwater plants and just sitting at the bottom. And, of course, Harper, was scared. I'm not going to catch the turtle while she's on the paddleboard. Okay. But we got this amazing view of it moving through the seaweed. It was delightful. And it was good to see my old friend slash nemesis again. I love that guy. Girl.
Yeah. So you were able to kind of squelch the fear and maybe spark some curiosity in your niece?
Oh, yeah. She was curious about it from day one. She was scared that I was going to try to catch it and put it on the paddleboard with us.
She's not.
Which, to be fair, is a reasonable fear. But I know better.
Yeah.
Probably most of the time.
Now, if this is a dumb question. So if they're really big is how you described it, right? Does that mean it's old? Does it get bigger or is it, I guess
yes.
I don't know. Okay.
It means it's old. Mm-hmm. Takes time to reach that size. It means it's most likely female. The females get bigger so that they can produce more eggs. And it means it's growing in a really good environment.
Hmm.
Plenty of food around. Yeah.
That's great. Well, hey, while we're talking about having students be curious, I think we should listen to one of the reports that came in this week. Some kids got to do nature as well as astronomy near Palisade. Mm-hmm.
Hi, this is Helen,
Bella,
and Macy. During astronomy camp at Long Lake Conservation Center from July 31st through August 3rd, the temps were a pleasant high of 83 degrees Fahrenheit and a low of 54. Some haze from wildflowers blew in, turning the waxing gibbous moon a brilliant red. It didn't help stargazing, but it sure was beautiful. Other extraterrestrial sightings included clear views of the Milky Way, the Big and Little Dipper, Cassiopeia, Orion, a double star, and sunspots we saw through the Hydrogen Alpha Solar Telescope.
Through the Minnesota Astronomical Society 25 and 30-inch Dobsonian telescopes, we saw the Lagoon Nebula, Ring Nebula, Dunbell Nebula, Swan Nebula, the Whirlpool Galaxy, and the Hercules Cluster. Thanks to Minnesota Astronomical Society for sharing the universe with us.
In terrestrial sightings, we saw a large snapping turtle in the lake. We enjoyed hearing loons calling at night. We saw a cicada, Downy Woodpecker, woodchuck, chipmunks, dragonflies, a garter snake, a bumblebee asleep on flowers, a tiny frog, a katydid, and a hummingbird moth. We also saw a fawn and a doe. The fawn was a third size of the doe and still had clearly visible spots. We had a great week of camp, and we want to remind everyone to unplug, get outside, look up, and
live connected.
Don't we forget look up?
I know. Yep, that's an easy one to forget.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially, you folks living in northern Minnesota that still have dark skies. Mm-hmm. That is such a gift to be able to look up and see all those stars in the Milky Way.
There was a spotting of a big snapping turtle there. This is the time we're going to be seeing them a lot. We should be keeping our eyes open?
Throughout summer, you'll be seeing them a lot. And now that the water temperature has warmed up, they'll still haul out on land to heat up in the morning. But now that the water temperatures are so warm, they can do the same thing, basking by just sitting in that top layer of water where it's pretty warm. And they can warm their bodies up that way without exposing themselves by getting onto land. So you may be more likely to see from far away, it just looks like two little dots on the water. One is a little bit pointy, and that's the snout. And then you'll just see, like, a little hump from the shell. But they'll sometimes move together, or they'll disappear suddenly. Mm. And you have an idea that that's a turtle. But
yeah, you know, that the warm water temperatures was a conversation we had this week. I talked to our early bird fishing guide, Jeff Sundin, on Thursday, and he's talking about the DNR reporting that there's been more fish kills. We also have a story about it on our website at kexe.org. And, you know, he's recommending, you know, as it'll start to cool off, but you can change what species you're fishing for and keep more fish alive. You know, better to be fishing for, say, the panfish and bass right now, who are more used to it because they're up higher in the water. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. I think I'm thinking about
that,
right?
Yeah, they hang out in warmer parts of the water column. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The walleyes in northern are not used to that.
Yeah. The other thing people can do, well, at least people who own land or have some control over shorelines, planting trees next to the water provides shade, also, you know, good for wildlife. Mm-hmm. And then allowing those natural, like, seaweed plants to grow also provides shade for that lower part of the water column and helps keep water a little bit more cool. But yeah, our lakes are changing.
Yeah. Well, let's take a listen. So it is the beginning of August, and a big part of John Latimer's phenology report this week had to do with everything that is ripening.
Yes.
We had a neat little picture of a fox helping itself to raspberries. And that is one of the things that happens. Just going over some of the August events that take place. First of all, lots of fruits and nuts are going to come ripe in August, including raspberries. Blackberries will ripen this month. Crabapples will ripen this month. Chokecherries are right on the verge of being ripe right now if you are a chokecherry fan. The white oak, the bur oak, acorns will become fully developed this month. And I think for a lot of you, hazel will become, the nuts of the hazel will become ripe this month during August. And in terms of hazel, you may be looking at them. If you have been looking at them, you will see that it is a pretty good year for hazelnuts. And we're going to have a pretty bountiful harvest of them if we can get them before the deer and the bears and the squirrels and the woodchucks and the chipmunks and just about every animal out there will be after them. And the amazing thing is that it takes them less than a week to completely remove the crop. And sometimes it's only a day or two. Once they are ripe, they are gone that fast. So keep an eye on your hazelnuts. You may want to harvest them a day early. I know in my own experience, there have come years when I thought, ooh, tomorrow's the day. And I go tomorrow and it's a day late. They have already disappeared. And lest you think this is something new, they have been doing this forever, and it is a common note among naturalists going way back that the hazelnuts, once they are ripe, poof, they're gone.
Poof is right, huh?
Poof, yep. I mean, that's a sign that they're a really good energy source, I bet. Mm-hmm. Full of good nutrients and fat. But I don't know that I've ever gone looking for hazelnuts, now that I think about it.
Yeah, I know I have not. I don't even think I'm a big fan of hazelnuts. So, but no, it's always, I'm always curious. Who knows?
I like hazelnut chocolate.
There we go.
Wonder if you can make your own Nutella with Minnesota hazelnuts.
Maybe. I mean, you can make pancakes out of acorns, we found out last year with ham radio.
Yep. Acorn flour.
That's right. Yep. A lot of work.
Yeah, I loved that. Yeah, I love that note on the fox eating raspberries.
Mm-hmm.
speaking of canids and fruits, my dog, Drogo, he loves a blueberry, and he'll always eat them from our hand, but much like a bird, like one of those baby birds that lands on the feeder but can't figure out how to get the food into its mouth, mm-hmm. we would go blueberry picking, and he would sit next to the blueberry bush and wait for us to feed him blueberries. And so we slowly, like, moved our hand closer and closer to the berry plant until we were just holding the berries in our hands, and he started eating them. He finally learned how to eat blueberries by himself. Very proud of him. But there's the Voyageurs Wolf Project, I think is the name of the program. It's also funded by the LCCMR, and it has these trail cams up all throughout Voyageurs National Park, and they've captured wolves going out and eating blueberries, like for the first time caught on camera. I just think that's fascinating. You think of them as primarily carnivorous, but...
Yeah, that video, I just sent that one to you as well, Charlie. We heard from Cara from Reamer, sent that in on Monday night so that I could show it to John Latimer. Turns out not that big a deal for the canids to be eating the berries. Our raspberries are completely done at our house. I was able to pick last Thursday a whole bunch of blueberries. Got wind of a secret stash at a friend's house who's gone for 2-3 weeks and wanted to make sure they got picked. So those are in my freezer. That was our question of the week as well. And it seems like a lot of people, their answers this week were, I just eat them while I'm sitting there. You know, they just want it. They don't necessarily pick them for the year. But, and I don't. You know, I guess I don't like jam enough to make, I have made jam or jelly out of things before, but it's just nice to have some frozen blueberries to throw in your yogurt or your oatmeal or pancakes, have a little special breakfast for dinner night, you know, all those things. Did you have that?
Absolutely.
As you were growing up, did your mom convince you it was special? We were going to have breakfast for dinner?
I mean, I always love a pancake. Breakfast, but yeah, breakfast for dinner is always great. It was more my dad that would do pancakes for dinner and then would make them in the shapes of various continents.
This is explaining
it was a good
lot.
Time.
Yeah, I didn't realize till later it was probably we had no food in the house. Why my mom was, but she convinced us it was the most exciting thing ever.
So exciting!
Breakfast for
and
dinner,
delicious.
Yeah,
I might know what I do with extra blueberries. We picked a bunch while we were in Canada and then had too many, like, not sure how whether you're supposed to bring them across the border and so on. And so we made blueberry simple syrup with it. I think it's one part water to two parts sugar. And then I just chucked in a bunch of blueberries, boiled it for a while, and then poured it over, like, a cotton cloth to get all the, like, skins and stuff out. And that is so good. And put, like, a little bit of lime juice.
Oh, yeah.
In some ice cubes. Best drink. So delicious.
We want to hear from you if you've got some recipes for berries or tell us what berries that you have been collecting. You can always go to our speak pipe and it's easy to find. Look for Season Watch at KEXE.org. There'll be a link right there.
Yeah. And next up, I think we wanted to talk a little bit about the Master Naturalist Program. We had Ron and Leanne Plinsky on to talk about it. And if you don't know, the Master Naturalist Program is essentially like a series of classes you can take. And they're about one of the four different biomes in Minnesota. And they'll teach you a little bit about the ecology of the biome. But once you've finished the class, to be an active Minnesota Master Naturalist, you do 40 hours of volunteer work. And so I've been able to take two of those classes. I'm a master naturalist of the Great Lakes Northwoods region.
Okay.
And the Prairies and Potholes region. Somehow or another, I miss the Big Woods, Big Rivers, which is the part that I live in. but, yeah. So they joined to talk a little bit about that one and the classes that they teach as part of their volunteer hours.
And one thing that Ron and I, when we give classes, because we're enthusiasts, we're not experts. This is a bit daunting because I don't have the credentials that, for example, Pam Perry has. Pam and Ken Perry were early friends of ours when we first joined the Bird Club. So here's again another example of how long-lived relationships are when you find your peeps. You find your peeps. But we're enthusiasts, and I always like to throw out the disclaimer. We've taken some courses, we've done lots of reading, and so we know a little bit about a lot of things. And but I'm always afraid there's going to be that question that somebody's going to ask me, and I'm not necessarily going to know the answer, and I won't make something up. I'll just say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I don't know, but let's look this up or let's find this out."
That always the case. I refer to it as aspiring master naturalist. I am an aspiring master naturalist. I hope to become a master, but I'm a long way from that.
Well, and also I tell people, okay, if you are curious, observant, and enjoy being outdoors, you are already a naturalist. So yes, maybe we've taken the courses to become a certified master naturalist, but everyone, and I think all of our listeners, everybody who contributes to Season Watch, these people are all naturalists already. I love that.
That's right up the alley of Season Watch. The whole idea of just, we don't have to be masters. We can always be in the state of learning.
So Heidi, yes. Do you consider yourself a naturalist?
No, not at all. Enthusiast.
Well,
how about that? An enthusiast. Uh-huh. I'll take that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I'll join you in that one. Yep.
No. You get to be, you're now you're being like Malachi, who doesn't think he's a birder.
Well, I guess I'm an enthusiastic naturalist, maybe.
There you go. Yes, because you've actually taken.
But not a master.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like really relate to what they were saying about like, you know, we've taken some courses. We know a lot about. We know a little about a lot of things, and that's really how I feel too, like a very broad but shallow pool, unless you're talking about reptiles, in which case
you've
got it.
You're all
in. Turtles specifically. But yeah, and like I make mistakes on Season Watch newsletters and in here, and then I try to correct them, but it's, I think the joy of season watching is getting to learn all the time and not having to be right.
Yeah. You know, speaking of that, we do not talk that much about kind of the origin story of the Season Watch podcast. It really came out of that Season Watch group that's on Facebook. I still say the best use of social media there is.
Without a doubt.
No politics, no fighting. So I'm taking a look at that right now. You can find KXC Season Watch and be a part of it. You can post photos and just say, hey, I saw this thing. Or you can ask questions. So many people posting about the butterflies, caterpillars they're seeing that are becoming, you know, butterflies. We have a lot of Monarda outside the window here at the rain garden on the banks of the Mississippi River. And
look at you using scientific terms.
In that bee balm.
So that's the genus,
also,
I think.
Right? Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Or, come on. It's escaping me. What is the name of that plant?
Bergamot?
Yeah, bergamot.
There we go. That's right. We talked about that one last week as well, or John Latimer was talking about it on the morning show.
20 points to whoever can tell me whether it's bergamot, pronounced like French, or bergamot.
I thought it was bergamot because I have heard that in terms of something else. I don't know if it's food or like a tea, or I've heard it in a different context. And that's the way it was
said. Okay. I know you can make tea from Monarda, but
fisticuffs here. You're going to be Frenchy, and I'll just be plain old Minnesotan there.
Excellent.
They are part of the fast facts here. They're part of the mint family. Did you know this? I did not know that. We have some lovely...
Part of the reason they make good tea.
There we go. We have some lovely mint we got years ago from Maggie Montgomery, former director at KXC. It's a chocolate mint plant that we do nothing to and comes back all the time. And it's right in front of our back windows of our barn. And I even forget to use it, but I love it. I'll just kind of, when I'm up there mowing or doing stuff in the yard, you know, just grab a few leaves of it and
handy way to identify mint plants. Their stems are a square instead of like a circle.
Oh, okay.
Circular stem and cross section.
Sure.
They're little square stems. So then you know it's part of the mint family. They're not all edible, so don't just go eating any mint stemmed plant you see, but it's a good way to identify mints.
Well, I feel like I have to go back a little bit. I was talking about how much I was excited for fall. We still have plenty of summer left. And because it's warmer, the falls now, you know, you're able to be on the lake longer. There are lots of great things you can still keep doing. So I just feel like that was sort of a little Debbie Downer to start off our season watch.
It's a Debbie Upper for everyone who likes fall.
Okay.
I feel like lots of people in Minnesota like fall.
A Debbie Upper.
Yes, we do still have plenty of summer. And I don't know, August, those like long golden evenings in August are just hard to argue with.
Now, Charlie, I told you earlier this week, I believe there was either no baby wood ducks, you know, or no baby wood duck eggs there, or they did not survive because the mom is still flying in, but we never saw jumpers. We never saw, we're not seeing them by our shore. We're seeing other ducks and little babies going by and everything, but we were so hopeful. Oh.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
Wow.
I'm like, I'll be interested to see, you know, once she vacates, if you can look in there and see what's going on.
Yeah.
But is it openable?
Or? Yeah. Yeah, we can. We just got to get a ladder out there that's up pretty high and there's a top we can lift up. There's a metal top. And yeah, you know, the heartbreak of nature too, right?
Yep. Yep. Yeah, there's a little birdhouse outside my window here that had a little house wren family living in it. And once they all fledged, I, of course, went in and, like, looked to see if I could find any eggshells or anything else. And there's just, like, the body of a little fledgling. You know, it's just sad, but it's part of nature.
It is. Yeah. It is. Well, it's another edition of Season Watch. We want to really get you to get involved as well. Are you curious? Are you out there looking at things? Do you have questions? Charlie's really good at trying to figure out the answers to something or finding someone who might know the answers. So you can leave us a message through SpeakPipe. It's always good to hear your voice and to hear where you are and what you are seeing. Find that link to SpeakPipe at kexe.org under Season Watch or on your podcast platforms. There's a link right there.
Absolutely. And do we want to share the good news about LCCMR?
Sure.
Yeah.
Go for it.
We got a grant for from the Environmental Natural Resources Trust Fund. Mm-hmm. It's going to start in 2027 for the Season Watch podcast.
That's right.
So, yeah, we'll be bringing Erica Bailey Johnson, who's an Indigenous leader and very knowledgeable, also a biologist. I'm very excited to speak with her twice a month to talk about all things phenology and Indigenous and traditional knowledge. It'll be great.
Yeah, it'll start, that grant will start July 1st. This will be the third one we've gotten from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund because I think KXE and Season Watch and Phenology, they understand that we're including so many people in this and it is for the public and people are learning and connecting through this. And so we are super grateful that we were able to even start this program, start the position that you have, Charlie, thanks to the help of them, and to grow our Phenology Network. And each year, all the time, we're finding new ways to do new things to bring nature to folks.
I'm so excited. Yeah. I think it's going to be, a really enriching addition to the Season Watch program. So I'm excited. Can't wait.
All right. We want to thank the contributors, the folks' voices we heard this week. We heard from our longtime members, the Plinskys from the Baxter area, the Master Naturalists.
Who I first met as part of my Master Naturalist class.
There we go.
And then I met them later through KAXE.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, we heard from John Latimer and the Long Lake Conservation Center camps. They are always sending us their reports. So fun to hear that. And we had heard from that chipmunk sound, the monkin' around sound that came from West St. Paul from iNaturalist, right?
Yep. I forget the iNaturalist user's name. But, oh, perfect.
do we, Sarah 5295, should we say that?
Oh, yeah. From our friend and iNaturalist, Sarah 295. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Whoever you are out there.
Thanks, Charlie. We'll check in next week.
All right. Thank you.
There we go. That was good. It was 31. Cool.